First up, Steve Aiken, to you. You've been pretty critical this morning of the Stormont executive, accusing the top two essentially of taking their eye off the ball on this one. Is that really fair, given the fact that what's driven this decision by Caterpillar has happened way beyond Northern Ireland?
It's not an accusation of taking their eyes off the ball. We have lost over the last sort of 9 years Sinn Féin DUP have been in government. We have lost somewhere in the region of 4,000 to 5,000 sort of critical jobs. And for each one of those critical jobs, there's 3 to 4 jobs are associated with that. And if you look at those figures, that's the kind of thing that Northern Ireland can ill afford to lose. But we really need to consider where we're going to. We as a party and as the official opposition, we called for a proper manufacturing or industrial strategy. We tabled that when the Assembly sat. And there was no understanding of where the issue, where we are. You know, we're looking at...
What difference would that have made, though? What difference would that have made?
No, that is important because we need to critically understand where the problems are. We have high energy costs. We have very poor infrastructure. Our skills sector, we have underinvested in our universities to the tune of £55 billion. We spend 750-odd million on sort of Invest Northern Ireland a year.
But what difference would that strategy made to those 250 workers who are now facing the prospect of maybe life on the dole?
We need to make Northern Ireland the place where people want to come and invest in. But we also need to be able to support our own indigenous manufacturing sector. If we have a strong manufacturing sector, we will have more companies will wish to stay. We will build a skills base and we'll be a much better place to be able to promote jobs for Northern Ireland and prepare ourselves for the challenges, particularly post-Brexit, that we're leading to.
Gavin?
Well, good morning, Enda, and good morning, Steve. I think, first of all, it's very disappointing that Steve hasn't spared a thought for those in the comments that he's made this morning who are waking up not knowing whether they are one of the 250 or not.
Gavin, yesterday I was... Gavin,
hold on.
Sorry,
hold on, Steve. Let Gavin finish his point and you can come back in again then. Go ahead, Gavin.
And I also think it is a huge disservice to those who have lost their jobs previously or those who are involved in Caterpillar to in some way say that this is down to the Stormont executive. What Steve's talking about, what the Ulster Unionist plan was about, was changing the title of a document. Not once have they suggested what they believe should be in this manufacturing strategy, or indeed how it differs from what is in the economic strategy that we have for Northern Ireland. No comment on the £270 million that the Stormont executive have invested in manufacturing. No reflection that of this year we have reached 80,000 jobs in manufacturing, which is the highest since 2008. You haven't heard that from Steve this morning. Instead of focusing on what is talked about as official opposition, but it's come down to curmudgeonry.
Yeah, but in fairness to Steve Aiken, it's not just the Ulster Unionist Party who have called for this. We have Manufacturing NI, and we also have the unions as well saying that we need a manufacturing strategy. And they say that you're being selective in the figures that you're pulling out.
Well, I haven't heard them say that today, and then I just gave you those figures. Those figures are matters of fact. But more importantly, I have not heard from either Steve or from the unions, or from Manufacturing NI, what it is they believe the manufacturing strategy would have done one for Caterpillar, or for Bombardier in my constituency. Do they think, for example, because we know that Caterpillar is a result of a downturn in the global oil industry, in mining and in extraction, do they believe that how we prop up the jobs in Belfast, we should invest in those industries in far-flung fields? Is that one of the suggestions?
Okay, let's see if they can respond to that.
They're not giving any.
Okay,
they're not giving any ideas.
Let's see if they can respond to that, and I'm going to come to David Thompson shortly from Unite. But respond to that point first of all.
Well, the first thing is I was very clear yesterday when I was on the television talking on the news last night. I was very clear, and South Antrim, you know, we have many, many people who are employed in Caterpillar, and have got huge concerns, not just about these job losses, but job losses that have been in the past. Also, job losses at Bombardier, job losses across the whole sector as well. We have been to the forefront of saying, what are we going to do about this? What is the plan? Gavin talks about the enormous amount of investment that's gone in. Where are the measures of effectiveness?
Yeah.
What's happened?
Yeah,
we have seen UK manufacturing announcing some of its best figures recently. But Northern Ireland manufacturing is not in the same situation. And we do have significant problems, particularly around the issues of energy, around the issues of infrastructure, around the issues of particularly getting a skilled workforce. These are things that they've had 9 years to sort out.
Yes, but in your statement, just to bring it back to Caterpillar, in your statement you have accused Dormont Executive of being complacent over the job losses. So you're clearly linking the two here, but at the same time, Caterpillar are saying this has nothing to do with Stormont, this has nothing to do with any kind of strategy. The forces at work here are far beyond the control of our politicians here.
And I was, for many years, I was the chief executive of the British Irish Chamber of Commerce. I've worked with some of the largest companies and the smallest companies across these islands and global companies as well. I think if you listen to your union representatives and you listen to the people at manufacturing NI and the people in sort of the various business representation organizations, we know what's actually going on and what the issues are. Many of these issues are around doing with skills base. Many of these issues are around to do with support. Many of these issues are to do with things like fundamentally the Irish Sea is one of the most expensive places to transport ship goods across. These are things that our 9 years worth of Sinn Féin DUP government should have been sorting out. And it doesn't help when elected representatives, and I know Gavin pretty well, and he's a good MP. He knows these are issues that need to be sorted out. So it'd be brilliant if he actually realised and got behind this. And when we retabled the industrial strategy when the Assembly resets, we would like the support of our government to be able to put manufacturing at the centre of what we do by having a proper strategy. And a proper strategy, GB is about to introduce.
Okay, I'm going to bring Gavin strategy back in a second, but I want to hear from David Thompson first from the Unite Trade Union. Davy, you heard there what Gavin had to say earlier. Nothing they could do could stave off these redundancies that are coming down the line now for the Caterpillar employees. And he, in fact, is saying manufacturing is in a good place in Northern Ireland.
Look, I think we need to be careful in terms of what we do say. We tend to be looking at one issue, and fundamentally what we do is we play down Northern Ireland. And I've heard Stephen mention skills. We have one of the greatest skilled workforces in this world. We supply quality manufactured parts. In terms of a manufacturing strategy, we have not said to Stormont, give us one. What we have actually said to Stormont is, sit down with the key stakeholders. Let's put out where we want to get. Let's set targets which are not within the programme for government. Let's set out outcomes that we would like to achieve. And let's make a roadmap on how we actually get there.
Is that not in the economic strategy? Is that not already in Stormont's economic strategy?
No, it's not.
Maybe Gavin or somebody can tell me what the actual targets are. You know, productivity is not mentioned within the economic strategy. One of the key measures of manufacturing. That's a fact. It's there. It's in black and white. But in reality, what we have is a programme of government that can't show failure because they have no targets. They have no measures to achieve. There's a lack of ambition within it, and we believe we need to sit down and get real. When we talk about manufacturing, yes, in real terms, Northern Ireland manufacturing is strong, but the high-end engineering-type jobs are being dismantled and thrown to the wind. That's the reality of where we are. We're not blaming Stormont on what happened yesterday. We haven't blamed Stormont on what happened to Bombardier. We know global measures take that, but we have indigenous products here. The madness of Wrightbus last year not getting a BRT contract, months after, or weeks after Michelin, a year after JTI, that's the madness of what we do in Northern Ireland. We don't support and help our own industry.
Gavin?
Well, I actually think I'm very glad to hear Debbie on this morning because what he has said is incredibly constructive. Just to deal with a couple of points, the Programme for Government itself, as we know, is a high-level document. Underneath the Programme for Government, we have an economic strategy. And so what I would like to see happen, I would like Unite to be involved in this, I would like to see Manufacturing NI, I would like them to take part in the consultation and say, OK, the decision has been made as to whether we have an economic strategy, an industrial strategy, or a manufacturing strategy. Set that aside. Here's what we think needs to be in that economic strategy that will make the difference for manufacturing. Because you do not have unwilling participants in this. Simon Hamilton is the Minister for the Economy who wants to see manufacturing thrive. We're not ignoring the difficulties. And I think, Genda, you'd said that I would suggest manufacturing is in a good place. It is in a good place, but for these big, bad stories that we've had. And they do have an impact. So mm-hmm. The overall figures may be good, but what we want to see is manufacturing succeed. The Minister mm-hmm. wants to see manufacturing yeah. succeed. And where there are those positive, those constructive, and those sensible proposals, which may or could have been in a manufacturing strategy, where you feel there are deficits in the economic strategy, then make those arguments, build the support. I'll be behind you.
Yeah, isn't that
we'll
a,
get it into the economic
isn't that a fair point?
Let me respond.
Just a minute.
To the consultation document. We have put forward our positions. We have put forward for the past 2 years. for people to sit and actively speak with the key stakeholders, ourselves as employee representatives, manufacturing NI. We have heard nothing from Stormont to sit down and do this. There seems to be an unwillingness at Stormont to actually sit down and do this with us. Now, I don't know whether it's because it's party politicking of, well, the Ulster Unionists led it, it's the first opposition bill, let's blow it out and show who's the big boys here. The reality is the people of Northern Ireland need this.
Andrew, just to say, it's not blowing out the initiatives, the aspects of a strategy that could be there to assist manufacturing. It's the notion that by putting a different title on the document that we already have is going to make a difference.
Yes,
that
I know.
Won't make the fundamental.
Hold on, Steve Aiken. Hold on a minute. Let me hear from Steve Aiken. Isn't that a fair point? It doesn't matter what title is on the document. As long as it does the same work, who cares?
No, because that's not the situation. The reality is we've had 9 years of Sinn Féin DUP government. Many of these issues should have already been addressed. The reason they haven't been addressed, because government hasn't been able to talk to each other, it hasn't been cross-cutting, and it hasn't been able to look at these situations at all. What we need to do by having a proper industrial strategy or industrial and manufacturing strategy is to be able to cross all these different layers of government to actually have something that is delivering. We have been in discussions with the unions. We have been in discussions with the major manufacturing companies. We have been in discussions with the major organisations. And everyone is saying, when is government going to get joined up? We've had 9 years of this, Enda. We need to move on. And that's the important thing. And it's too important for the people.
And let's
of
not
Northern
forget
Ireland.
Your party was around the executive table for much of that time, Steve Aiken. So you weren't on the outside shouting in.
We were one part of it.
But you were there. You were part of government. You were part of government.
Enda, you know as well as I do that having one person round that table when they're being deliberately starved of resources, not being supported. But the key economic strategy, look at all the economic ministers. Look at when we had Minister Foster, look at when we had Minister Bell, and now we have the current minister.
Mm-hmm. But
what's happened over that period of time? Why didn't we manage to sort out the energy situation? Why haven't we managed to sort out all the skills issues that we've had? We're still talking about it 9 years
the
on.
Bottom
That's
line,
why we need a strategy.
The bottom line, you call for a strategy, you say the issues need to be in this strategy are not the same issues that the companies are quoting whenever they're laying off workers in Northern Ireland. That's not the issues for them, the issues that you want in this particular strategy.
And we're in a flexible international situation where things are changing all the time. Could you imagine Caterpillar or any other company if Northern Ireland had the strongest skill base? It had the strongest infrastructure. It had the best energy prices. Do you think when it came to investment decisions, whether they were going to shut down here or change there or to reinvest in Northern Ireland, where do you think they would be going to? That's what I'm talking about.
Well, no, the bottom line is if their product is not selling, they stop making it. And as a consequence, people lose their jobs. That's what it comes down to here.
But the other point of it, and this is the thing that you haven't talked about, is the importance of companies seeing Northern Ireland as a great place to do research and development, a great place to be able to develop products, a great place to then start working in manufacturing, and all those issues. Those are the fundamentals that we should have built and should be there ready for us going forward. And this is why this is not a question from the Ulster Unionist Party. This is a question very much from all the workers in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland deserves better.
And for those people who would accuse you of trying to score cheap points against your political opponents over the loss of 250 jobs, because that point has also been made, that you're trying to tie it in to this strategy, a strategy which would have made no difference to those people losing their jobs. How do you respond to that?
Who says it would make no difference? We're talking to the unions. We're talking to the manufacturing sectors. We're hearing people say things have got to change. This is not cheap points. There's nothing cheap about anybody losing their job.
And have you been in touch with the bosses at Caterpillar to discuss this strategy that you're talking about?
We've been in contact with the bosses of Bombardier. We've been talking to some of the key sectors as well. We've been talking to many people, specifically to Caterpillar, no, but to many others, yes, I have.
I think, Enda, in fairness, one of the big key drivers that the economic and every other strategy within Stormont sends out is around corporation tax. Now, the reality is, within the high-level, high-end of manufacturing, they tend to be cost centres. They don't benefit from corporation tax cuts. So I do know from talks with the previous Minister of Labour trying to look at stuff that would help and assist it. All we have said, and by the way, I'd make it clear, we as a union have not attacked any single individual party or political party. What we're saying is the executive have got their programme for government wrong. They need to sit down with the key stakeholders in this, and they need to move forward proactively. No, yesterday's announcement wouldn't have made any difference if we had an industrial strategy, but it may make a difference to a decision in 5 years' time or 10 years' time if we actually sit down and have a roadmap of how we get there.
Well said, David. Well said.
Gavin Robinson?
Yeah, and I just want to come back on three things. Just to bust a number of myths, and I don't disagree with what Davey has said there. But on skills, Steve has said on two occasions now that should we have a better skills base, we may not be in the same position that we are today with Caterpillar. There are 250 individuals who are highly skilled, and have, through no fault of their own, nor no responsibility lying with the executive, find themselves in a precarious position today. Second of all, 9 years of a government, you rightly point out, which was a four-party government, but we're in a much better place now. We have a fresh start agreement. We know that there has been streamlining within the executive, which most importantly brings together economy and skills. Mm-hmm. So what has been said today, those are the sort of streamlined decisions.
But here's the reality, Gavin, for those 250 workers now who are perhaps facing the prospect of on the dole and trying to find other jobs using the skills they have in the manufacturing sector. Where are they going to find them?
Well, good. I'm glad you've got on to this point, because this is probably the more important aspect of this debate. That's the role of government. That's the role of government, not only to do what we can to increase the job prospects and opportunities that there are within manufacturing. As I indicated, we've now got 80,000 people employed in manufacturing in Northern Ireland, the highest since 2008. And I've heard others say it's not as high as 2007. We know the downturn that took place. We know about the economic recession. But where we are now is as a result of 8 years' hard work, of stability within the sector, and of growing the capacity and growing those opportunities. So where there are opportunities for retraining and reskilling.
And I think one of the things we need to be looking at and what we need to be careful of, we have many companies that are even in the high end of manufacturing, are excellent within this country. We look at the Wright buses, BE Aerospaces, we look at Moyola, those types of companies, Langford Lodge, opening a new site in the Monkstown type direction, not so far away. We do have some excellent ones, but we have to support and look after them companies. Look, those jobs that are being lost could be looked, can we make a supply chain that actually fits into those companies as opposed to having to import everything?
Yes.
Those things need to be looked at. They need to be done within a defined strategy, and it needs to move forward for the benefit of Northern Ireland.
And the biggest challenge, of course, Gavin Robinson, is around Brexit, because no matter what is in a strategy, there is so much unknown out there in terms of where Northern Ireland is going to be after Brexit. And of course, that was one of the other issues your party has come under criticism for in recent days, not least, of course, we had the meeting yesterday with the Brexit Secretary, Stephen Farr from the Alliance Party is with us. Stephen Farr, you have some issues over how all of that was managed. Do you think it's farcical?
Well, I do. And first of all, I mean, in terms of the issue around what has happened in terms of Caterpillar, it is important that, first of all, we offer support to the workers who have been affected, who are about to be affected by this news, and that we look to see what we can do in terms of retraining and signposting them. I'm actually speaking to you this morning from East Antrim. We just had the local Alliance Association's business breakfast, and obviously there is concern in the area about the implications, but also people have been pointing out that there are local strengths in terms of the engineering sector. There are other advanced engineering companies who are active in this consistency and indeed elsewhere in Northern Ireland. So there are underlying strengths in our economy. But at the same time, we have to be conscious that while there may well be global factors behind the Caterpillar decision, the solutions as to how we create more manufacturing jobs will depend upon us having ready access to the single market. That is going to be one of the main sources one of the main destinations in terms of exports. It's all fine and good. People say we can create new markets elsewhere in the world. We should be doing both. These are not mutually exclusive. Europe, alongside trading with China and East Asia, United States, Canada, they all go hand in hand.
Yeah, and you have described the approach taken by the DUP and Sinn Féin this week as farcical.
Well, this is not David Davis having a meeting with two political parties, talking to the DUP and Sinn Féin. He's here to talk to the Northern Ireland executive. The Northern Ireland Executive should be providing a single voice in terms of discussions with the UK government. If we end up with the DUP version and the Sinn Féin version, we're sending out mixed messages as to what is important to us now.
Okay, let me get Gavin respond to that. Gavin, go ahead. Why was that the case?
I mean, I'd like to respond to a number of other points, but that's simply not the case. And in fairness, I think Stephen has just misunderstood or misread some of the press that came out yesterday. The First Minister and Deputy First Minister had a meeting with David Davis. The Deputy First Minister was unavailable because he was on leave. But during the First Minister's discussion, they discussed the joint and agreed position that was written to David Davis and to the Prime Minister on behalf of the First and the Deputy First Minister. One voice, one position, one approach from the Northern Ireland Executive. But David Davis then had two further meetings. He had a meeting with the Minister of Finance separately, and he had a meeting with the Minister of the Economy separately. He was approaching the ministers from their departmental perspective. Martin McGuinness wasn't around yesterday, and so he wasn't there. It's been presented as separate meetings, but in actual fact, there were to be three: the Office of First and Deputy First Minister, of which only the First Minister was there, the Department of Finance, and the Department of the Economy.
But in fairness, Gavin, David Davis left here yesterday with two very different messages from what he heard from Martin O'Muller and what he heard from Arlene Foster.
Martin O'Muller made his comments about Interreg and about peace monies, both of which fall under his department's bailiwick.
He also Arlene talked Foster, about Northern Arlene, Ireland remaining within Europe.
He made some political comments on the steps of Stormont Castle. But Arlene Foster, as the First Minister of this country, presented, and she discussed this openly, it was publicised yesterday, the agreed position of the Northern Ireland Executive as corresponded to the Prime Minister and built upon those discussions yesterday with
It's not farcical.
And in actual fact, I do believe there's been a misunderstanding in how this has been presented.
So you've called this wrong, Stephen Farrar. You've called this wrong.
I haven't. And if we look what happened whenever the Prime Minister visited, there was a very quick hello, a quick photo opportunity with the two First Ministers, and then there was separate meetings.
Following which, have to have,
there shouldn't be separate meetings. This is a single coherent executive. In particular, OFM, DFM have to present a single united front. If we send out different messages, we're going to sell Northern Ireland short. We have an incredible challenge facing us.
You're wrong about
that. We are going to see growth dropping at the UK as a whole, but we have to appreciate that structurally the Northern Ireland economy is starting from a worse place, and our growth figures have been more sluggish than the rest of the UK over the past number of years. We are more at risk from Brexit than any other part of the UK. Our economy had more room for growth. That has now been stunted by what has happened. Businesses are facing huge uncertainty. And whenever we talk about the letter that was sent, this is being presented as some sort of triumph in terms of common working. That was the lowest common denominator of agreement. There are major gaps in that letter. For example, let me name three key areas. First of all, there was no reference to asking for the rights of existing EU nationals in Northern Ireland to be protected. That is the first thing that on everyone's lips.
Issue.
That was not mentioned in the letter. Secondly, people are papering over this notion that Brexit means Brexit, and at the same time we're going to maintain the common travel area. There are massive, massive contradictions between those two statements, and there was no effort in that letter from OFM, DFM to try to tease that out or to highlight that this is actually going to be a major
Okay, problem. Gavin Robinson, you're simply papering over the cracks in, is what Stephen Farrar is saying.
No, not at all. First of all, for EU nationals remaining within the United Kingdom, it's a national issue, Stephen, and these discussions are going to take place up until the point in which Article 50 is triggered, and for 2 years at least beyond that point. When it comes to the common travel area, Stephen's simply wrong again about the difficulties that are associated with that, because the European Union operates in the system of Schengen, and both the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom are outside Schengen. They're outside the European arrangements. The Republic of Ireland is not going to join Schengen. We already cooperate outside of the European Union on border security, on visa and passport applications. All of those things
are going to be dealt
but,
with.
But how, Gavin, can you present a united front whenever you have somebody like Martin O'Neill, you're going in to meet somebody like David Davis, the Brexit secretary, the man who's going to spearhead the exit negotiations, and his argument is Northern Ireland needs to remain within the EU. That's his starting point. How are you going to present a united front whenever that's his message and Arlene Foster's on a completely different page?
Well, it's not his starting point. And Arlene Foster was on the same page as the Deputy First Minister and on the same page as the Northern Ireland executive. The agreed position, what Stephen is saying is lacking, was there. She started from the agreed position. And as you can see, clearly from the content of that letter, it accepts not only that the decision to leave the European Union has been taken, but that there's much work needs to be done. And that's the collective will of the Northern Ireland executive, that Northern Ireland needs to seize the opportunities. Northern Ireland needs to benefit from this. And even going back to the earlier conversation, when Davy Thompson from Unite made reference to Belfast Rapid Transit and the difficulties associated with not shoring up our manufacturing sector, right bus here in Northern Ireland, because of EU rules. Those sorts of impediments, those barriers to progress, those barriers to investment in our own economy in Northern Ireland will be removed by this decision. And the Northern Ireland executive are going to see these opportunities. And I in Westminster and our team in Westminster are going to be
Let me let Stephen back in again. Let me let Stephen come back in and I'll come back to you in a second, Gavin.
Okay. First of all, whenever we talk about deregulation, getting rid of European regulation, if we negotiate some sort of access to the single market, that will come with a requirement for European regulation without us having any input to negotiating the shape of that regulation. And also a lot of regulation comes from our domestic situation as well. So the notion that we are going to get rid of regulation, I think, is a bit of a misnomer. The second point I want to make is around this notion of the common travel area and the fact that both the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom are part of the Schengen Agreement. Up until now, the UK and Ireland have always moved in unison in terms of their access to the European Union. For the first time ever, they're moving in a different direction. That's going to create a massive tension. The second point on the common travel area, we have to understand there's a difference between the nature of border control, which is what the common travel area is about in many respects, with the notion of the freedom of movement and the freedom of goods. If the UK leaves the European Union and we don't replicate full access to the single market and the same freedom of movement, we will be creating some sort of people barrier and some sort of customs barrier somewhere in these islands.
Isn't that the big headache that you cannot escape, Gavin Robinson? There will be a price for access to the single market, and that price will be open borders.
I don't think it's a big headache. And Stephen talked about massive tension between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland. The massive tension that I've seen over the last number of days is between the Republic of Ireland and the European Commission, with the European Commission chasing out huge investors like Apple, with bringing forward their judgment on tax. And there have been many who have suggested that the best future for Ireland is outside of the European Union as well. And I suspect, and this is a moving feast, but I suspect that the news of the last couple of days are going to strengthen those calls. But see the pessimism, Enda. See this view that we can't succeed, that we can't achieve. It is not only a disservice to Northern Ireland, but there's no basis in reality or fact.
People can be pessimistic whenever they see the First and Deputy First Minister listing a whole series of challenges that Northern Ireland is now facing because of Brexit. How can people feel anything other than pessimistic?
Not pessimistic, but if you have the ability to identify what may be a challenge or a barrier and you have the will to overcome it, is that not a good thing? Nobody's sticking their head in the sand here. Nobody recognises that there's going to be a big job of work to do. But we're going to seize the opportunities. We're going to make sure that we do succeed. Okay. I was in Farnborough Show just at the start of July, and I was supporting East Belfast companies who are involved in the aerospace sector. One small company in East Belfast, as a result of the Brexit decision, was able to phone up one of their American purchasers and say, if you order today rather than ordering the week before, it's £300,000 cheaper for you because of the currency fluctuation. That's one example of how manufacturing
Gonna leave the last word in this one to Stephen Fyre, because I know
we need to be very careful about trying to get a silver lining from very short-term currency fluctuations.
Yeah, absolutely.
While we may have winners in terms of people exporting, in the short run, we also have losers and people who are relying on importing in terms of goods, for example, into the UK and into Northern Ireland.
You're right. And when Stephen it works both ways. Yes, it does. So, Stephen, when you talk about, and just in fairness, when you talk about single market and single market access, and you consider tariffs, and there'll be some who discuss zero tariffs, some discuss minimal tariffs. When you put that against currency fluctuations which exist between the euro and the Great British Pound, there will be a decision to be had there as well.
So the bottom line is,
even if there were tariffs, it doesn't mean it's bad news or it should be pessimistic. If
why compromise access to one of our key trading partners, the European Union? We can have it all. It's not an either-or choice about the rest of the world versus the European Union. We should be looking to do both.
Well, I'm glad you're injecting some positivity now.
Okay.